This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services License 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome back to another episode of Uncovered by Equity Mates, where we shine a light on small and mid-cap companies that don't get a lot of analyst or media attention. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this interview. We love this Uncovered series. It's been a chance for us to speak to CEOs of companies that we haven't heard much about. They don't get much coverage by analysts or by the media, and we get a chance to uncover them for ourselves and for our audience. And there's some cool stuff happening. I think a through line through a number of these interviews, reflecting on them, is Australian universities are pumping out some pretty cool technology. We've done medical tech. This one is renewable energy tech. Like, there's some cool stuff happening, and there's a number of companies on the ASX that are working to commercialize them. And today we're speaking to the leader of Hazer Group, which is a company working to decarbonize the production of hydrogen. And they're using technology developed from the University of Western Australia.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story and a market that is obviously growing in importance. So we're sitting down with Glenn Corey. He's the CEO of Hazer Group. The ticker is HZR. And we're very fortunate to be able to get the time with these CEOs and get their understanding, firstly on their position in the market and what they're doing, but then also we put our investor cap on towards the end of the interview and understand a bit more about the commercials and the future of Hazer Group. So
yeah, hydrogen has been a big topic of interest in the Equity Mates community. This is a company working to bring new technology to the market. Before we get to it, we should say a massive thank you to Hazer Group for making this episode possible. And a final reminder before we get into it that Uncovered by Equity Mates is our chance to understand these companies' stories in more detail. It is not a buy, hold, or sell recommendation. Make sure if you are thinking about investing, you do your own research and you get professional advice if you feel like you need it. But whether or not you're thinking about investing, we love learning about and celebrating Australian stories, and hopefully this is a big one.
Uncovered. Now, there's a lot of excitement at the moment around the potential for hydrogen in the energy transition. So we thought we'd start the episode today by setting the context and understanding a bit about the established market for hydrogen as it is today. So can you help us talk through that, and particularly how hydrogen is used?
Sure can. And hydrogen has been and is a bit of an enigma. I don't know if you're aware, but it has its origins. It has a Greek origin. The word hydrogen has a Greek origin, hydrogen or hydro and gene, which is kind of the creator of water. Hydrogen is, it's a really versatile and clean fuel that when you burn it, it only produces effectively water, doesn't produce any emissions. So it's seen as a very clean, versatile kind of new fuel for the future, and as a zero emissions alternative to burning oil, coal, and natural gas. So a really versatile fuel that's used today, mostly in refining, as well as petrochemicals, in particular, the production of ammonia. And I like to tell a lot of our investors that actually the market for hydrogen today is actually very significant. To put it in context, the market is of size of around 95 to 100 million tons per annum. So again, in context, that's about a third of the total LNG market today. So a really significant market. I think it's valued at around 170 to 180 billion US dollars. And most of that, as I've said, is used for desulfurizing crude oil, as well as the production of ammonia and fertilizer today. So it's growing at about 6% per annum. It's forecast, depending on who you turn to, it's forecast to be growing to around 500 million tons, or five times the market today, by about 2050. So it's going to be a pretty big fuel, and replacing in particular existing markets, as well as new markets, including power generation, steel making, you know, replacing existing production, possibly mobility, sustainable airline fuels and other things, typically hard to abate sectors.
So I think that's an important starting point. It's a $150 billion market today, and it's going to grow, as you said, sort of 5X is sort of what people are forecasting. You briefly touched on some of the expected use cases in that list there, but maybe if you could expand on that a little bit more, from where the world is now to where the world might be, how do people expect hydrogen to play a bigger and bigger role?
So, as I said, today, other than coal gasification, almost all of the market is produced from a process called steam methane reforming, and I'll come back to that sort of throughout the call. The market is almost entirely used for desulfurizing crude oil and ammonia production. So that's almost the entire 95 million tons per annum. With that production comes a significant amount of CO2. And in fact, it's 11 times the CO2, which is almost a billion tons of CO2 produced alongside the hydrogen. The future markets are definitely changing. Of course, there'll be the replacement of existing production of hydrogen with clean forms of hydrogen. But the market is shifting also to what we call hard to abate sectors. Sectors that are very typical, in fact, very difficult to electrify, and you know, sectors such as power generation, the production of steel, cement production, as well as mobility. You know, there's a lot of talk about sustainable airline fuels, hydrogen mobility, and other sectors. So it's definitely growing beyond refining and the production of ammonia into petrochemicals, power gen, steelmaking, and other really difficult sectors that are hard to abate the CO2.
So I guess that leads to Hazer. You know, you just mentioned there, Glenn, that the current process leads to, you know, CO2 emission.
Yep.
And because of the emissions profile of the traditional way of doing things, academics around the world are now looking at new processes and ways of doing things, which is how Hazer has started out of the University of Western Australia. So can you tell us about the research and, I guess, the academic background of Hazer Group?
Certainly. Hazer, for viewers or listeners that are not aware, stands for Hydrogen and Zero Emissions Research. So it was some vision back in 2007 when the technology was developed, as you said, in at the University of Western Australia. It's been 15 years in development. The company has spent around $105 million on developing the technology. So it's a significant amount of capital deployed into developing the technology. We are a world first clean hydrogen production technology that is now at a stage where we're almost ready for commercialization. So it's a really exciting time on our journey. We've successfully scaled up the technology now five times over that 15-year journey. So every two or three years, we've brought on a larger scale of the tech, and it's mostly stayed the same over that generation of time. We've made some tweaks to it to improve it, and improve in particular the energy efficiency of the process. But it's been a pretty long journey, as most technology ventures can testify to. But you know, we're now at a very exciting stage where we are, you know, we brought our commercial demonstration plant online. It's going really well, and we're about to take the technology into the next phase, which is the commercialization phase. So a pretty long journey, but a very exciting one in front of us.
So I want to talk more about the scaling of this technology. I think you've gone from producing a 1 gram batch of hydrogen in 2007 to producing 60 kilograms of hydrogen per hour. So it's a pretty incredible story. But I think before we get too far into that story, let's just take a step back and talk about the process that was developed, the Hazer process. So if you can give us an overview of the feedstocks, the steps and the output, what goes in, how it changes and what comes out.
Yeah, so the process is called methane pyrolysis. Effectively, we take a methane-rich feedstock, which is natural gas or LNG or biogas or any gas that's predominantly composed of methane. And we effectively shove that into the reactor. At heat, what happens with methane pyrolysis is that the methane molecule, which is CH4, decomposes into its raw elements of pure hydrogen and carbon in the form of graphite. Okay. Now we do that with zero emissions in the process, so it's a clean technology. And our X factor, if you like, is that we use iron ore as a catalyst to accelerate and lower the temperature of the process. Most other pyrolysis ventures or technologies that are out there today are doing the same reaction or process at temperatures that exceed 1800, 2000 degrees Celsius. So you can see that our temperature at around 800 to 900 degrees is significantly lower than the rest of the market. That puts us in a very advantageous position as one of the lowest cost producers in the market today. So a really strong competitive advantage as a technology. That use of iron ore as a catalyst is our intellectual property on the company. We've got that protected in a number of jurisdictions, in fact, over 32 jurisdictions around the world. That alongside our Hazer graphite are the two key pillars of our intellectual property rights.
So, Glenn, how does that process compare to the traditional one? If this is the Hazer process, how does, I guess I don't actually understand the traditional way of the process that spits out CO2. So yeah, how do the two compare?
Yeah, so think of it, good question, Bryce. So just unraveling today's incumbent technology, it's called steam methane reforming. And effectively what happens with steam methane reforming is it uses the same feedstock as what we do. So a natural gas or methane rich feedstock. Effectively, they use steam and water to effectively decompose the gas. And when you mix methane with water, of course, you get hydrogen, but you also get significant amounts of CO2.
Right.
And as I've said, you get effectively for every ton of hydrogen, you get actually 11 tons of CO2. So it actually produces more CO2 than it does hydrogen.
Wow.
So it's more of a CO2 technology than it is a hydrogen technology. It is a massive problem. So if you think about that market of 95 million tons per annum today, there's a billion tons of CO2 that comes with it. That's a massive problem for industry. And if you think about all of the refineries in the world, and we think there's around 2,500 to 3,000 steam methane reforming plants in the world today that are emitting all of that CO2, it's a massive problem for industry and decarbonisation. So Hazer uses the same feedstock as the incumbent technology in gas. Instead of using steam and water, we use heat to decompose, which means we effectively just split a methane molecule into pure hydrogen and graphite with zero emissions. Now, the other way that you will have heard lots of talk about is the use of electrolysis, which is effectively shoving a whole bunch of electricity through water molecules. Now, what that does is it splits water into, if you think about water chemistry, 101, H2O, electricity will split water into hydrogen and oxygen. Okay, so of course that's very clever because it's clean, but the challenge is it takes about 7 times the amount of energy to split water than it does to split gas. And that's just chemistry and thermodynamics. You can't change that. And so when you think about electrolysis it's always going to be 5 to 7 times the energy required. In fact, it's about 55 kilowatt hours per kilogram of hydrogen relative to our 8 to 10 kilowatt hours. So you can see the difference in energy that's required to do the same process. And so you can see just how competitive we are from a cost perspective relative to not just today's technology, but also kind of the emerging technology in electrolysis.
Yeah. Look, we want to get to cost comparisons and stuff in a sec, but I think before we do that, we should talk about scaling this technology, because I imagine part of scaling it is figuring out ways to do things, you know, cheaper at scale and find economies of scale scale and all of that. So I flagged it earlier. 2007, researchers at the University of Western Australia were producing 1 gram of hydrogen. And then you and your team, Glenn, have the challenge of taking what works in a lab and making it work at scale in the real world. So tell us about the journey, some of the steps on that journey, and where you are today.
Very good. Certainly. So if you think, look, first of all, technology ventures are never a straight line. And you'll talk to every CEO and every chief technology officer around the world, and you'll get different stories, but the same story is they're never easy. And so they require time. There's always certain failures. There's learnings along the way, and you effectively reset. There's a lot of resilience required to kind of take technology ventures to the commercialization world. We are not any different to any technology venture. In our 15 years, I can tell you that there has been a few false starts and a few hurdles to jump over, and that's all part of developing technologies. So we've done it 5 times, Ren, so we are in a good position in that respect. So we've effectively scaled up successfully now to commercial scale, which is, you know, a point where you're ready to take it into the commercialization and industrial world. And one of the real uniquenesses of the HAZER technology is that we have adopted and repurposed a certain component from the refining industry called a fluidized bed reactor. Sorry to get technical on you, but it's quite an important adoption in that we've repurposed an existing reactor from refining technology and used that in HAZER. And what that has meant is it meant that we have used something that we know scales already. And so the ability to take something that's already proven, repurpose it and use it in our technology has minimized the risk to scale. And that's what our customers and our prospective customers really like about HAZER relative to other hydrogen technologies, and that they can see a very clear pathway to large scale production that no other technology in this space can provide. It's quite important in technology ventures to minimize and de-risk processes as you kind of grow up and scale to commercial levels.
I guess that brings us to the question around cost and the hydrogen that you're producing, what else is available in the traditional means of doing things. So help us understand, where you sit on, I guess, your cost to produce versus alternative options.
If we go back to the 3 ways of producing hydrogen, the incumbent technology of steam methane reforming, ourselves, which is methane pyrolysis or commonly called turquoise hydrogen, and thirdly, electrolysis and green hydrogen. SMR, incumbent technology, of course, very mature, can produce hydrogen in the range today, typically about $2 to $3 a kilogram. Okay. Now that's excluding the cost of the CO2 that comes with it. Okay, so you've got to, at some point, you've got to do something with that. You've either got to shove it in the ground, abate it, or pay for the cost of production. Carbon costs are going up, Australia is talking sort of $50 to $100 a ton. We know in Asia, parts of Asia, it's creeping up to over $100 a ton. In North America, it could be as high as $200, $300 a ton. So the cost of the incumbent technology is only going to get more expensive because you've got to start to pay for the CO2, and of course it's 1 to 11, so you can start to see where that's trending over time. Electrolyzers, green hydrogen, of course it's that 5 to 7 times more energy intensive than what we're doing, so they're going to be on a different cost curve, if you like, at the higher end, and that's recognized by industry, and a lot of work is being done to reduce the costs of electrolyzers and electrolysis itself. Now, where we fit quite uniquely is that we use the same feedstock as the existing technology. We've got about the same energy intensity, so we're not doing anything massively different, same temperatures roughly. So we should be very comparable with today's technology of $2 to $3. And now that's not at scale. So at scale, you know, we see the benefit of and efficiencies of scale, technology improvements as we kind of grow up and become much larger with, you know, existing partners and new partners. And we have no CO2 to kind of abate. So we do see a range of costs anywhere from as low as $1 a kilogram in US, which is extremely competitive, up to around $3 to maybe $3.50 to $4 in Asia, where gas prices are very high. Mm. Now, that's before subsidies. That's before efficiencies of scale and process improvements. So we do see a pathway to being, you know, as low as $2.50 in Asia, which is, you know, the holy grail, really, when it comes to hydrogen production technology. So it's an exciting space. We do absolutely see ourselves as a leader in this space, as well as from a, as well as on the low end of the cost curve. So a pretty, you know, an enviable place to be as a hydrogen production technology, so to speak.
Yeah, I love that. It's very exciting. Love that, you know, this technology that was developed in Australia at an Australian university is taking it to the world. It's good to see. And I think while a lot of the focus of this conversation, and I think probably a lot of the press around Hazer more generally has been on the hydrogen story for obvious reasons, we shouldn't brush over the graphite you produce, because graphite is an in-demand material and will be important as part of the renewable energy transition, particularly around batteries. So maybe if you can tell us a little bit more about the graphite you're producing it and the market that you'll be selling into.
Spot on. Look, I absolutely agree with you. It's easy to forget that we've got, I sometimes call our technology one technology that serves three markets: the hydrogen market, the graphite market, as well as the overall industry decarbonization market. Hydrogen, we know what the value of that is, and the emerging market is massive, and it's very large, and it's a big prize. Graphite, look, the dynamics of the graphite market are changing. You may be aware that China has threatened or is threatening to step on the hose for graphite supply worldwide.
I'll just interrupt and say I know next to nothing about the graphite market. Yeah. So I take it from that China produces a lot of the world's graphite currently?
Exactly, Ren. It actually, I think the numbers, and I may not have these exactly where they are today, but I believe China produces about 80 to 90% of the world's natural as well as synthetic graphite. Okay, so you can see the threat of potentially China stepping on the hose being a major impact for the market for graphite. You know, today it's used for, you know, lithium ion battery technology, and, you know, other potential applications.
Golf clubs. I know you can get graphite golf clubs.
Very expensive bicycles, as a few people will appreciate. So exactly. So look, it's an emerging market. Now, Hazer graphite actually is very unique. It's a synthetic graphite. It's very high purity. It's got all the normal structures of a graphite compound, nanotubes, onion tubes, and the rest of it. And you know, it is starting to get a lot of attention from potential new markets. We've got a partnership with Mitsui, one of the world's largest trading groups that are based in Japan, and we've had some really good feedback from prospective customers in Asia and globally that have tested our product, ranging all the way through from lithium-ion battery technology, steel making. There's at least 7 applications of Hazer graphite identified in the green steel making process that we're aware of from steelmakers in Asia, in Northern Asia. Water purification, PFAS removal, a cement additive, you know, and a whole bunch of other applications. So, you know, they could be markets that are very substantial, very high value over time, as well as kind of abundant. So we're really excited about the graphite side. It could be a real kicker for the value in our technology when you think about the use of not just hydrogen, but also graphite. And they're diversified markets as well. So they're, you know, they in some respect provide the company long term with, you know, diversified earnings base. So again, you know, one technology that serves at least two tangible markets that could be very exciting and very valuable.
You mentioned that you're working with Mitsui, and I think that's a good point to segue to some of the partnerships you're involved in around the world, because it's not just Mitsui who you're working with to roll out this technology and to explore new markets. So tell us about some of the trials you're doing, some of the partners you're working with, and as, you know, investors from the outside looking in, are there any particular countries or particular trials that we should be paying particular attention to?
Yeah, look, watch this space. You know, I like to say that we're running and chewing gum at the same time. We're developing a technology down this pathway, but at the same time, we've had significant inbound calls, if you like, to discuss our technology and use it in industry. So we've actually got three foundation projects at the moment. We've got what I call first mover advantage in North America, in Asia, as well as in Europe. So we're kind of covering the globe nicely. In North America, we've partnered. For your listeners, think about Origin, but much larger. So a significant gas utility that is looking to decarbonize across its entire portfolio, very comfortable with gas as a commodity, and, you know, using Hazer technology to accelerate the transition to hydrogen. So a really important project in North America where, you know, there's a lot of access to capital, lots of industry, and a real focus on decarb. In Asia, we have teamed up with Chubu Electric and Chiyoda. And again, for listeners, Chubu Electric is the world's largest LNG importer. So they import significant amount of gas and LNG into Japan. Again, identified Hazer technology as a transition technology to effectively clean up their power generation portfolio using their existing gas that's coming through as LNG. So again, a really unique project there. They've also got a partnership with Chiyoda Corp, which is a very large engineering group, so they'll support the project from an overall build perspective. And in Europe, we've teamed up with a very prominent group called ENGIE or ENGIE out of France. You've seen their name around a few times. They're, again, I guess, leaders in kind of low carbon solutions. Again, very comfortable with gas, and we're developing a project there in the northwest of France. And we're hoping to decarbonize existing refining as well as cement capacity. So three really important foundation projects, of course, Mitsui on the graphite side. And all of these guys are what we think is strong validation for the technology. You know, they've come to us. we've been busy developing a technology, and we've had a lot of inbounds about it and saying, look, you're a leader in this space. Mm. How can we work together? And, you know, wait till we start doing proper business development. You know, behind all that, of course, is no less than 20 to 25 commercial conversations with, again, big industrial partners and customers that are looking at Hazer as a real serious low cost, low emissions hydrogen production technology that's going to get them to where they need to be much faster than any available technology today. This is a first of its kind technology. It's very advanced. It's recognized that we are the lowest on the cost curve and a leader in this industry. And as you've said, Ren, you know, a homegrown technology out of the University of Western Australia now to be on the global stage of, you know, decarbonization is a very exciting place to be. So we're, you know, excited about the journey and the partnerships, and we're grateful for the support that we've got from industry and all the prospective customers out there.
Yeah, it's a great story, Glenn. You mentioned their business development and obviously ramping things up as you move to commercialization of the process. So putting our investing caps on, you're in the middle of a closing out a capital raise at the moment. So can you give us a bit of an understanding of your financial position, but also the key milestones from here deploying that capital raise?
We have just completed another round of fundraising, which was really well supported by our top five investors, as well as some new institutional and professional investors. So we're very happy to have raised almost $15 million, which was our target. So again, grateful for the support from existing and new investors. Our register's starting to institutionalize, which is always a good thing for smaller end of town. And as we grow up, you know, attracting now more sophisticated institutional investors, I think, is again a testament to the quality of the underlying business and the technology and the strategy that we've got to drive it forward. The funds are going to be clearly used to accelerate the technology and to deliver the commercialization strategy. You know, we've got the tech now to a place where it's proven for the fifth time at commercial scale. It's all about the next 12 to 18 months of effectively signing up license agreements with prospective customers, the three that we've got, and, you know, some of those 20 to 25 that are in the pipeline. So 15 million, fantastic. We had, as of our last reported cash position, was $10 million at the end of last year. So if you sort of add that all up and you think about what's coming for the rest of this year, we've got a bunch of non-dilutionary inflows coming in as well. We've got more arena funding. We've always been a really healthy recipient of R&D rebates from the Australian government. You know, we've had, you know, some big rebates because we're a technology venture, and we're in the running for more grants. So we see, you know, I like to think about sort of $20, $25 million of liquidity to drive a business that only spends roughly, you know, $1 million to $1.5 million a month. So you can see that we've got an extended runway. And we've done that deliberately to kind of give the company the opportunity to get through some pretty significant milestones today. Of course, get the CDP to where it needs to be from a test program over the next 3 to 6 months, and at the same time run hard on these commercialization and license arrangements with existing customers and new customers.
And for people who aren't familiar with the acronym, the CDP is the Commercial Demonstration Plan. And so that's in Perth. It's producing 60 kilograms of hydrogen an hour. Is that where it's at now?
Yep, it's that level. It actually, we talk about it as about 100 tons per annum of hydrogen and about 380 tons per annum of graphite. And the objective there really is to produce hydrogen and graphite, of course, but do it on a continuous basis at an industrial scale. And that then we can leverage into our commercial projects. And it's really just testing that the tech works. And we've had it running now since the end of January, and we've had, you know, really, so there's nothing in here that, you know, we've done it five times already, commercialization and preparing it for, you know, customers and the commercialization phase. So, you know, we'd love to invite you to see it at the right opportunity when you're in.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Would love to come over. So I guess long term, like, and I'm sure the answer is a bit of column A, a bit of column B, but when you think about rolling this technology out, is it mainly through these partnerships and licensing it to people with existing facilities, or is it building more plants of your own?
Yeah, very good question, because our business model is what we call asset light or CapEx light. We're actually a small company. We're 25 to 30 people. Our skill set is around technology development. It's not actually building stuff. So you can imagine these are going to be fairly large plants. We're certainly not going to put the company in a position where we've got risk to capital exposure. So the ability to license the technology to prospective customers is really what we're about. And so it's like a Xerox model or a Microsoft model, where someone else is going to build it, they're going to own it and operate it, but we'll license the technology. Now, that has a couple of advantages. The most important advantage is that it gives us zero capital exposure. So, you know, one thing about capital projects that most people don't like is that they always go up and they get delayed.
Yeah.
So not having exposure to that is a real advantage for the company. And secondly, it gives us early access to free cash because we don't have that upfront capital expenditure. Just through licensing of the technology, we will receive license fees and royalties straight off the bat. So, you know, it is for investors a real advantage to be investing in a company that doesn't have a significant capital exposure and expenditure and a kind of early access to free cash. Mm. So, you know, two really big benefits of having a licensing model.
So, Glenn, to close out, we always love hearing where you think Hazer will be in 10 years' time. So help us understand what success looks like for you, what the big picture is. If we were to, you know, from an investing point of view, look long-term, think long-term, what does Hazer Group in 10 years' time look like?
Well, Bryce, it's massively exciting. I think you've hopefully you've got the flavour of the competitive technology that we've got today. Long term for me is, I think, kind of long term, but I think we're not going to have too long before. I like to think of this as a kind of a public listed unicorn in the making.
Nice.
You know, if you think about the license model that we've got, it only takes 10 plants worldwide today for this to be a billion-dollar platform. Now, we've already got three of them in the making, three foundation projects and a big pipeline of prospective customers. So it's not going to take much for this to be a multi-billion-dollar platform. We know one of our peers in this space is a multi-billion-dollar company, but we don't think its technology is as competitive as ours. So you can already see that the read-through from a valuation perspective could be substantive here. The analysts that cover us have at least a share price, I think, on average of about $1.70. We traded about 50 cents. So you can see that this is already three times money. But when we look at the underlying business, the pipeline, the existing projects, the competitiveness of the technology, this could easily be a billion-dollar platform. Look, we aspire to being 10 plants in 10 years. It's easy to say, but we say it because we've got conviction that the customer base is going to be there.
Love.
And if every plant in the world throws off $80 to $100 million of NPV in royalties and license fees, you can see immediately how big this could be. So I would just say to your listeners, watch this space. It's going to be a pretty exciting journey for the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, if 10 plants in 10 years does play out, then it'll be a 10-bagger because you're currently at about 100 million market cap. So
that is how I'm going to
Now, of course, do your own research. But look, it's been great to understand certainly a lot more about the hydrogen market and the process that Hazer is going through at the moment. So, yeah, very much appreciate your time, Glenn. And for anyone listening at home, we've got a written article on our website that provides a lot more information on what Hazer are doing. And of course, I'm sure if you wanted to chat to Glenn and the team, then we can hook you up as well. No, yeah, anyway.
Absolutely.
But we'll leave it
thanks,
there.
Thanks, Bryce. Thanks, Ren. Been a pleasure to chat to you today.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. All the best. Good luck.
Thank you.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 54067. 697.